Rails Across the Plains. Before Theodore Judah died, he had pointed out the way that tracks could begin to be laid from west to east across the United States. But what about a route from east to west? Long before there was a Pacific Railway Act, Grenville Dodge had made discoveries that would lead to the establishment of that route. He would play an even greater role than Judah in making the Transcontinental Railroad a reality. Grenville Mellon Dodge was born near Danvers, Massachusetts, in 1831. He was only 14 when he helped explorer Frederick Lander survey a railway line. Impressed with his young assistant's abilities, Lander encouraged Dodge to enter Norwich University to study engineering. He graduated from Norwich in 1851 and moved to Council Bluffs, Iowa, to conduct surveys for several railroads. His explorations soon caught the attention of Abraham Lincoln. In August 1859, Dodge was in Pine Bluffs, Iowa, when he met presidential candidate Lincoln. "Mr. Lincoln," Dodge would later write, "sat down beside me and by his kindly ways soon drew from me all that I knew of the country west and the results of my reconnaissances." Dodge joined the Union Army as a colonel in the 4th Iowa Volunteer Infantry Regiment and eventually rose to the rank of Major General. It was his contributions as a builder and repairer of military railroads that earned him the greatest distinction. Dodge took to the task with such dedication that at one point his crews repaired more than 100 miles of track and 182 bridges in 40 days. Throughout the war, when someone asked where Dodge was, the common reply became, "We don't know where he is, but we can tell where he has been." In 1866, while fully occupied with his UP duties, Dodge was elected to the United States Congress. He had never campaigned for that office, and totally engrossed in seeing the Transcontinental through to completion, never really served in the post. Dodge was a great supporter of the notion of a railroad that linked the nation. In 1853, while on a surveying mission for a budding railway, he made the first of many discoveries that convinced him that a transcontinental railroad was possible. He had just completed his survey when, standing near what is today Independence, Missouri, he made an abrupt decision. Intrigued by the wilderness he had just encountered, he decided to keep moving westward to see where he would end up. After several days, alone on horseback, he stopped at the top of a high cliff. The sight beneath him took his breath away. Spread out below was the Missouri River, twisting and turning into the distance. Beyond, to the west, as far as his eyes could see, lay the Platte River Valley and the enormous empty plains. He realized, as he later wrote, that this was the site of the route first made by buffalo, next used by the Indians, then by the fur traders, next by the Mormons, and then by the overland immigration to California and Oregon. This, he thought, would be the perfect place for a cross-country railroad to begin its march westward across the plains, past the Rocky Mountains, and into the Utah and Oregon territories. The biggest challenge, he knew, would be getting tracks through the formidable Rockies. In 1866, Dodge would solve that problem as well. Now a post-Civil War general in the United States Army, Dodge was leading a small party on a scouting mission through a section of the Rockies through which few white men had ever passed, when he had a most unexpected experience. "I took a few mounted men, I think six," Dodge later wrote, "and with one of my scouts as guide, went up to the summit of Cheyenne Pass, striking south along the crest of the mountains to obtain a good view of the country. About noon, in the valley of a tributary of Crow Creek, we discovered Indians who, at the same time, discovered us. We dismounted and started down the ridge, holding the Indians at bay, when they came too near with our rifles. We followed this ridge out until I discovered it led down to the plains without a break. I then said to my guide that if we saved our scalps, I believed we had found a way through these mountains." He was right. Just as Theodore Judah, with the help of Daniel Strong, had solved one of the thorniest problems in finding a route through the Sierras, Grenville Dodge had come upon an avenue through the Rockies, upon which, difficult as it would be, a railroad could be built. By the time Dodge had made this discovery, many of his accomplishments, particularly his genius at railroad building, had become known. Among Dodge's greatest admirers was a man named Thomas Durant. The two had met several times when Dodge was carrying out his pre-war surveying. Neither man, however, could have had any idea of how closely the future would bring them together. When, through the Pacific Railway Act of 1862, Congress had established the Union Pacific Railroad, it had stipulated that it was to be run by a board of directors. And, just as the Big Four controlled the Central Pacific, one member of that board would come to control the Union Pacific. That man was Thomas Durant. Thomas Clark Durant was both a brilliant organizer and a scoundrel. Born in Lee, Massachusetts in 1820, he graduated from Albany Medical College, but he had no intention of spending a lifetime in medicine. His great ambition was to make money. After a short stint in a medical office, he became a director of Durant, Lathrop & Company, a grain exporting company based in New York. But he saw his real opportunity to make his fortune by gaining control of the Union Pacific. When the UP was formed in 1862, Major General John Dix was named the company's president. But Dix was far too occupied as commander of the Union forces to pay sufficient attention to the company. As the UP's vice president and general manager, Durant became the real head of the Union Pacific. One of the provisions of the Pacific Railway Act of 1862 was that no person could own more than $200,000 worth of stock in the company. Acting in the same illicit manner as the CP's Big Four, Durant lent money to his friends, persuaded them to buy UP stock, and then had them secretly sell the stock back to him. This way, he became the UP's largest stockholder. Durant and some fellow stockholders set up a construction company called the Crédit Mobilier. Through this company, they secretly awarded themselves the contract to build the UP's portion of the Transcontinental. Each time the government paid for miles of track laid, a portion of the money was funneled to Durant and others to whom he had either sold or given stock. To ensure that there would be no government investigation, Durant gave significant amounts of stock in the Crédit Mobilier to key politicians and government officials. Included among them were the future Vice President of the United States, Schuyler Colfax, several members of Congress, and the future President of the United States, James Garfield. Congress had left it up to President Lincoln to select the place where the UP would begin laying its rails. On November 17, 1863, Lincoln picked Omaha, Nebraska. On December 2, 1863, Durant turned over the Union Pacific's first shovelful of earth. A huge crowd roared its approval, soldiers fired enthusiastic salutes, and one speaker proclaimed that the Transcontinental Railroad was the greatest enterprise under God. It was a gala beginning, but it would be a full year and a half before the Union Pacific would begin laying down its tracks. The frustratingly long delay was caused by several factors. High on the list was the fact that the UP was having serious problems finding the right men to lead the railroad's construction. Throughout the Civil War, Durant had been attempting to lure his friend Dodge away from the army. Finally, in early 1866, he succeeded, and Dodge joined the Union Pacific as its chief engineer. What he discovered was a company that, just like the Central Pacific at its start, was having great difficulty assembling the thousands of workers needed for the enormous task ahead. As soon as he assumed his duties, Dodge set about solving the labor shortage by tapping into a huge source that had become available. A devastating potato famine had forced thousands of Irishmen to flee their country and seek new opportunities in America. Once across the Atlantic, they had begun filling up the cities along the eastern seaboard. Anxious for work, Irish laborers by the thousands joined the Union Pacific work crews. It would be a most fortunate development. Just as the Chinese workers would prove themselves so successful in tackling the mountains, The Irish laborers would meet the challenges of building a railroad across the plains. As poet Stephen Vincent Benet would observe, they were strong men who built the big road across the plains, and it was the Irish that did it. They could swing a pick all day and dance all night if there was a fiddler handy. They liked the strength and wildness of it, would drink with the thirstiest and fight with the wildest. It was all meat and drink to them. And with the Civil War at last over, Dodge was able to turn to another labor source. In 1866, legions of veterans of the conflict found themselves abruptly out of work. Thousands were unmarried men with no obligations back home. Before the war, many had never left home, and despite the horrific aspects of the war, they had gotten caught up in the adventure of it all. Now they were seeking new excitement. And what bolder and riskier undertaking could there be than building a railroad across an unimaginable wilderness? The men who were called upon to construct an iron road across so many miles into the unknown had to be willing to accept discipline, take orders, and operate with military precision. After long years of war, the Civil War veterans had, of necessity, acquired all these abilities. As Grenville Dodge would later write, the organization for the Union Pacific Railroad was upon a military basis. So many men upon it had been in the Civil War. The heads of most of the engineering parties and all chiefs of the construction forces were officers in the Civil War. The chief of the track-laying force had been a distinguished division commander in the Civil War. And at any moment I could call into the field 1,000 men, well-officered, ready to meet any crisis or any emergency. The UP was organized like an army. What was needed was a man who could lead it. Fortunately, Durant and Dodge had found such a man. His name was Jack Casement. Of all the tens of thousands of men who built the Transcontinental Railroad, John Stephen Jack Casement was the most colorful character. Tough as nails, Casement dressed like a Russian Cossack. He carried a bullwhip and always wore a revolver in his belt. Even though he was only 5 feet 4 inches tall, he stood 10 feet tall as a leader of men. Casement was born in Geneva, New York in 1829. When he was 17, he began working on a railroad as a track layer, and at 19, he was promoted to construction foreman. Casement was extremely close to his younger brother Dan, who also became a railroad worker. By the late 1850s, the Casement brothers were responsible for overseeing the construction of the Sunbury and Erie Railroad and the Erie and Pittsburgh Railroad. They gained national attention when one of their construction gangs laid 3 miles of track in a single day. Jack Casement entered the Union Army as a major in the 7th Ohio Infantry. During the conflict, he led more than 400 men out of an enemy trap, earning a promotion to brigadier general. His ability to organize both men and large undertakings served him well as the construction boss of the Union Pacific. One of Casement's first accomplishments was to create a special train that would travel the entire construction route. Called the Perpetual Train, it was the heart and the brain of the entire operation. No one had ever seen anything like Casement's creation. Pushed rather than pulled by a huge locomotive, it had more than 20 cars. At the front of the train, closest to the track laying, were flat cars that carried scores of different tools and other equipment. The blacksmith's shop was also perched on one of these cars. Next came the strangest cars of all, the 3 rolling bunkhouses where many of the workers lived. Specially built in the Union Pacific's shops in Omaha, they were each 85 feet long, 10 feet wide, and 8 feet from floor to ceiling. Each was lined with triple tiers of bunks in which the workmen slept. The 3 cars had no windows, and on hot nights they became stifling. On these evenings, many of their inhabitants took to erecting makeshift tents on the train's roofs so they could sleep in the open air. Others slung hammocks under the train. It was also not uncommon for many of the men to escape their sweltering quarters by pitching tents beside the tracks.